Campus FM presents a talk organized by the Malta branch of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, entitled The Maritime Legacy of the Knights. This talk is delivered by Mr. Joseph Muscat.
Good evening. Thank you very much for coming. This evening, as you know, is the fourth lecture. It's the Maritime Legacy of the Knights. Let's not forget the main theme of the whole lecture, organized always by the Maltese Association of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta. You know, it's the Maltese legacy. Perhaps few have given importance why I put it in inverted commas. Because, as you know, I repeat it once, and I never stop from quoting it, that the most important date in our history is 1530, when the knights brought us into Europe, and they brought Europe into Malta, you know. The big difference that they made when they came to Malta. But this is important. In fact, I made several references to it in my book, Dar Maltija, the Maltese legacy. The knights, of course, were the flower of the noblesse oblige of all Europe, but when they came to Malta, some of their pride, they had to cool it down because they accepted several traditional, acquisitions that the Maltese had. One of the most important was that they were very, very lucky to find that we are a seaborne, seafaring nation. We are surrounded with the sea. So for them, and this is important, when they came to Malta, I think here was the crowning glory, not only of the Navy, of their maritime legacy, as we shall see, but also the crowning glory, I think, even of the whole history of the night. So there is no need to introduce Mr. Joseph Muscat. You all know him, and as much as he knows, in my view, he is a European expert on maritime history, stories, and whatever that floats on water. So Mr. Joseph Muscat will tell you about it.
Thank you, Salvatore. Thank you for honoring me with your presence. A few opening remarks before we start on with the pictures. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Roses. Well, I'm going to treat the legacy, what's left, what have the knights left behind them that reminds us of the naval exploits of the knights. I'm not going to recount the deeds they did at sea. That's another story. But I'm going to bring to your attention the various aspects, a sort of my palette, which I used to write my story or to paint my stories about the Navy of the Order of St. John. A palette, multicolored, multi-species of buildings, the manuscripts, ex-voto paintings, for example. There are lots and lots dealing with the knights. The arsenals, or what's left of them. The machina, for straightening up the the masts. The stores at Bormla. The few models, but exquisitely done. Very nice. I'm going to show these, all of them. What about the Sant'Anna, the Carrack Sant'Anna? What's left of her? We've got few things that reminds us of the Carrack Sant'Anna. And generations, I'm going to mention this too later on, generations and generations of sailors, good sailors, especially from Senglea, who used to to embark on the ships of the Order of St. John. Then there's the altar that used to be carried on the Colossus of the Order of St. John, which is at Vignacourt at Rabat. Just a look at the armament, guns, etc. Well, our armor needs a lecture on its own. And of course, graffiti, which, again, tell us the story of the knights, of those who sailed with them, etc., etc. I'm sure I'm going to leave something out. I'm sure about it. For example, I'm not going to mention the Inquisition or or the what do you call the notorial archives. I've never been there. I know it would have been impossible. I'll give just one glimpse at the Consulado del Mare, which is at Rabat, Santo Spirito. Out of the 144 huge volumes, I only managed to say I looked at them. I managed the first 10 volumes, the last 10 volumes, and 10 from the middle. Otherwise, it's impossible. Cats, in this respect, are better than we are. They have nine lives or seven, I don't know. But what can you do? I never went to Father Joe, used to tell me, Joe, look, come and have a look at the Inquisition, at the documents. I knew if I went there, it's a never-ending research, or the notorial archives, anyhow. So I am going to leave things out. Cannot do otherwise. What about the building techniques still in use now? Only a couple of boat builders left, who still use terms and lingo, language, as it was used during the Knights of St. John, and I'll tell you why later on. And when we mention tools, they've got a French touch. Why? Because so many of our people worked at the arsenals, and the arsenals were run on French technology. Therefore, so many names, like whoever thought of the rebequin, the brace wheel, that's French. Fourmature, le fermoir, that's French. David, when we want to, that's French. And that permeated into our language since the time, I don't know, not during just the 2 years that the French were in here in war. That's nothing to do with it. Anyhow, we're going to start with few paintings which are in themselves a mine of information. Now, I've been lucky to been left in to have a look at the private collections, thanks to these private collectors. And private collectors, government museums, etc., etc. For example, pictures like this, which is exhibited at the Maritime Museum. You never end pointing out the main points dealing with the story of ships in Malta. The Galleys of the Order, the Dysart Pass, the fishing kayak, the Gozo Sprunara, etc., etc., etc. That's how information builds up. This is still with us. That was left by the Knights of St. John, somehow or other, somewhere, I don't know where. But it's there in exhibition at the Maritime Museum. Other pictures, for example, show the the usual sequel to a battle at sea between the great ships of the order and the Maghreb people. After 1700, the great ships of the order, Vascelli, or ships of the line, never lost an encounter at sea against Muslim forces. Never, not once. They always won the day. Of course, when the Muslims started to cut down on their forces, when finally they resorted to their famous Shebek, the Order of St. John started to cut down on the forces also. But they never lost an encounter at sea against Muslim forces. We go again and see another, look for example, we'll see a better picture than this later on, the same one. How, looking attentively at pictures, you will see the Maltese Tartana coming in with another ship. The endemic kapar shrub grown on our bastions, it's there. I like this. Here we see the Duke of Brigantine, which was always on guard duties near Neptune Fountain. But whenever the Grand Harbor was badly affected by weather conditions, that Duke of Brigantine used to be tied near the Orsi Tower here. This is the only picture I found telling this story. This is how I built up my information about the history of the ships, of the ships. Another, especially, I like this. I never saw in all my findings and research the famous fork used to lift up lighted shrub wood, Ava, for fire. Am I saying it? No, so brushwood, I think. Brushwood. To clear off the old tar on ships. This is the only one I came across. This oil painting is in a private collection. Look at the casks and casks of tar to be used when careening a galera, a galley. You see how these are still with us. These things are a legacy that the knights left us, from which we can study the history of the ships of the night. Another good painting, look at this. This ties up with the other one, look. Showing the full force of the galleys entering harbor. Now, of course, this is a manifestation to show off. But without looking at any details, I can tell you this is the picture dates to the 1680s. Why? Because there are 8 galleys headed by the Capitana. That was the time. After that, they started to cut down on their on their units because they were not needed anymore after the war at Candia, I think. These are what I like to call the very legacy left to us by the knights. Another natural sequel to a battle at sea against Muslim forces. But this time, this ship is included. Look here. You have to have an egg for these things. I never saw this again in any other picture. These are normal warships. By the Knights of St. John and the other to Muslim North African country. But look at this, a beautiful shebeck. And that's how I keep saying how you build up your information. Of course, when a painting is dated, it's better. But sometimes you have to do your own calculation and whatnot. This is dated 1720. And here, look at these two. The galleys are under their awning. Another special thing. When galleys were badly affected by sun or rain, a huge awning was spread over the galleys. Now here our galleys are going out of harbor from Marsham Shed. But as soon as they will be inside the enemy, the tents, the awning had to be brought down. Again, this is a unique picture. Well, you can see the galleys under their awning. That's in a private collection too. Here, we a familiar picture we see in the council room. What are considered council room at the Palace? There are a set of 8 frescoes or 8 things. Again, look, how nice. Dated 1638, and that was the day when the Knights of St. John took 3 Muslim ships at a time in one go. That was only natural. Now, out of the council room, you will see paintings dealing with the galleys of the order, but when you go out in the corridors, you will see the lunettes deal exclusively with the great ships of the line. We call them Vascelli or Third Rates. But in the council room itself, we see the exploits of the knights on their galleys. And they had something to be proud of, too. We see again, look, even this one is there in the council room, the taking of the Bengen in 1700. You find people saying, the Knights of St. John were so good in attacking merchant ships. But this was an 80-gun great Algerian ship, and it was subdued also by just 4 galleys of the Order of St. John. This is not just a sitting duck. It was an 80-gun warship, Muslim warship. It was taken too. Spinola has been very unlucky by the beginning of that year. He lost the San Paolo wreck. He lost his capitana when it attacked a Turkish petacchio, but the capitana was old, it was 12 years old. On impact, the bows opened up and everybody went down. He with a few other knights were lucky and were not drowned. But then the tide turned in his favor again with the capture of this Bengen. There you are. And this goes on and on with these pictures, paintings and whatnot, which reveal to us the story of the Navy of the Order of St. John. Going out in the corridors themselves now, we see a lot of these lunettes. Pity they are so high, and they are badly affected by dust. But this one, I managed to take a picture of this one while it was still in the courtyard down below before they took it up. But again, we'll see here the story of the Bingen, the one we saw before. There's the story. And another very interesting thing is you'll see here a Muslim tartana, which were, so to say, very similar to a Maltese one. The Bingen was taken and its auxiliary, the tartana, by just 4 galleys of the order. These have, there's a lot of stories to tell about these Salvatore Sandal, or these pictures there of the lunettes. They carry the best of the exploits of the knights during the 1700. Of course, this is a way of propagating their news in knights by painting a lot of their exploits, and these things were repeated all over Europe. As a matter of fact, some of these pictures, you'll find them anywhere in Europe, being copied and recopied and recopied. That was a way of of spreading their not notorious, their famous exploits at sea. Denies it a lot. And I hate to see people saying and referring to the knights as being pirates. They show just a lack of knowledge. The knights never were pirates, they were corsairs, yes, you can call that, which is, there is a definite between those, because a pirate, as soon as caught, he was hanged. A corsair, no. Corsair was treated as a prisoner of war. The Knights of St. John were at a perennial war against the Muslims. Anybody working in their name was authorized to fly the flag of the Order of St. John as an ally. That defines him as a corsair and not as a pirate. And again, here we see another sequel with the Golden Sun. This was an Algerian ship being subdued easily by the ship of Santa Caterina. Some of these warships of the Knights of St. John did marvelous things at sea. The Santa Caterina, for example, under the famous Langon, he was asked to go to Oran, deliver munitions and provisions. He went in between Muslim forces from left and right, firing both sides. He went in, delivered his cargo, and out again. And he was back to Malta. Sometimes it's like reading stories for children. But the things that were done sometimes by some valorous knights, captains, are unbelievable. Again, we come now to another facet on my palette in tracing the history of Knights of St. John using the manuscripts. Oh, there you are. This is open for I have at home manuscript 1759, which deals with the regulations of Knights of St. John on the galleys. On the galleys. But I read it once, twice. What's that for all the information that's contained within it? Now just imagine the section 12 of our it's all dealing with the navy of the Order of St. John. This one is taken from manuscript 318. It shows all the joints that go in the building of a vascello, of a ship of the line. Of course, you won't be able to build one with just this information, but then there are other details further in the same manuscript, which gives full details on the building of ships. Another manuscript deals with the armament or guns carried on board ships, on battleships, with all the spare parts and things needed that go in handling a gun at sea. Again, manuscript 67, but this perhaps by Zimelli, but he left us these three very nicely drawn galleys. But more than anything else, he had in mind, I think, something beautiful, not accurate. Look at the gun here, if you can see it. That's an enormous thing. In real life, it would have capsized the galley, obviously. But then you look at the Pinto Capitana and at the Deroan Capitana, very nice. But not accurate. There you are. That's where the keen eyes have to come in when evaluating some pictures. Another manuscript, the famous 413 by Opizio Guidotti. Oh, he left us a marvelous thing. We've got a copy here, which was copied in 1896, I think, by a Jesuit, Father Strickland. The original is at Rome. One of the Nobel families, the Colonna family, I think. Anyway, the original. Now, I have noticed this Father Strickland, Jesuit, might not have been technically minded, because there are so many lacunas in the transcription of his manuscript, which means that he might not have recognized all the handwriting when he was copying from the original. But there you are. You have a first-hand information. Look how lucky we are to have all these things here, still here in Malta. This dates back to the 1620, perhaps. And you've got the picture of a galleon. Of course, it needs some adjustment and whatnot, but there you've got all the ingredients of the galleon that was built in Amsterdam in 1617 and paid by a knight. I don't know, Dorset or Dorset, something like that. But there you are, you've got all the ingredients of a good galleon of the Order of St. John. Just notice, Il Pulena figurehead. Just a horse with a mythological rider on it. Now look again at the poop cabin. They retained that of a galley instead of making it something else. They wanted to retain the stern cabin like the one being used on galleys of the Order of St. John. The rigging is typical of the period when one top sail was left up. It was admissible at that time. And another interesting thing. For the first time, one can see a statue on the cabin of a galley. Every galley carried its statue in wood, of course, according to the name it carried. This one, San Giovanni. There was San Giuseppe, there was a whole litany of saints. But there it is, look. And it was an honor when a captain wanted to greet someone aboard to meet him at the side ladder. You can see them coming in here. And of course, this is a capital because it shows the stern lantern here. And important to see the great awning or tent spread all over the galley. When a galley stood in harbor for a long time, they rigged up the tent to preserve the Spitzer from sun and rain, anyhow. There you are, that's again from Opizio Guidotti, 1620, 1630, something like that. And again, another picture from this order, very important. You will see the shipping of his time. He gave us the great galleon, the small galleon, a caramusal, but that's a Muslim ship, but it's flying the colors of the Order of St. John. One of those instances when a caramusal was captured, was found to be seaworthy, and it was manned again. Because then you see a caramusal up there, look, that's Muslim. But then you will see the various ships of the period. We'll leave out the galleys, all right. Then you'll see the Saika. The Saika was a Muslim merchant ship. And here you will see a Jerma. This again was a Muslim merchant ship, Barcata, the Fregata. Now you see, you start comparing things when you find various sources. That Fregata, for example, you see something like it in an ex-voto, it's a bar. Then you start saying, look, very similar, so there's something really true in these pictures. And if it wasn't something like this, how could you assess calling one a great galleon and the other a small galleon? Small galleon, it carries only 3 masts. The great galleon carries 4 masts. And it goes on like this, thanks to our famous manuscripts. I have said anything about manuscripts. There are so many in our public library. Anyhow, that's a source of inestimable value. We'll come to the ex-votos. Now, I am sure that some of these ex-votos, which we see at Zabar, at Rendi, at Tal Herba, Birkirkara, they were ordered by knights themselves. And they were no fools. They employed well-known Madonnari who painted these things. I apologize for the bad photo, but this is a really good one. You can see this at Tal Hinena in Rendi. I'll ask you if the painter of this ex-voto was not an expert in galley building, how could he show them in all positions being tossed around by the waves, etc., etc.? Another one, look at that. Lovely thing. And now look at the technical part about it. It's in a tempest. It's going under oars. Mitfuman, I don't know her. Rowing a quartiere, that means this must have took them a hell of a lot of trouble. So while half of the oarsmen were at their oars working, the other half were resting. They might be handed some ship biscuits or something like that. And there you are, you can see it, look. Only half of them are under working. While at the bows, you can see the anchors. So there was no time of applying some measures to stop it. There was no time to put down the anchors. So it's proceeding under. An emergency sail, you can just see it here, and balancing by the oars a quartiere, only half of them being in use, to balance the swinging of the galley. At Tal Herba. This is the Capitana Vittoria, and as she went out of harbor, a great gust of wind engulfed the mainsail. It was starting to topple over, but then it straightened up. But, again, this is the first time where I saw a kayak of the galley on that side, but I'm sorry, you can see it very much like the... the felucca, but I don't know what's happened. Does the expert, my expertise at photo? Anyhow, this is a watercolor, and dates back to the last period of Knights of St. John, 1750, something like that. Another picture, but this time is an oil color. We can see the the galley San Pietro. Again, a gust of wind almost capsized it. Look at the rowers scrambling over from one side to the other to balance the galley off. And they did. They arrived safely in harbor. Another very interesting thing. This is why one has to study these sources. Look at the bows here, and you will see two guns and the mast in the middle. Now, by that time, the galleys were using only 24 pounders, just two. During the 17th century, galleys were using five guns. With a huge one, we call it the courser, the main bow gun. But it was in the middle of the rambata, so there was no space for it and the mast. So the mast was rigged to one side of the huge gun. But by this time, only two guns were in use. There was not much business against the muscles by this time. And only 24 pounders were in use, and the mast was rigged right in the middle of the rambata. We call this the rambata. But again, you see how the emergency sail was all cut up and whatnot. And the black painted kayak is on this side. Ultimately, how we probably see a next photo, a very special one, presumably by Eraldi. This is by Correa. And how about the shipping in itself? It's not much help. What about this piece of lovely rope work? I tell you, I defy anybody to find it in books. Try and find this one. You'll never see it, how it was done. Now, there's another piece like it, another two or three pieces at the Tadoul Church with a lie. One of them is like, we call it a rat tail, Dempilfar, because it's coming down to a point so that it goes easily through blocks and whatnot. Look at that, how the working of this huge, we call this a cable, not a rope, mind you, a cable, because it's big. Some of these, that you can call it sometimes even bigger than that. And that was used for the anchors too. You see, you can appreciate what we've got here, all these sources to help us paint out the story of the Navy. Out of these arsenals, which are going to, nothing is left of them. This is the galley arsenal at Birgu. Probably during the 1630s, 50s, when there were three wooden sheds for the galleys. We learned that galleys were launched by the bows. You can see the bows here. You can see the omnipresent Dai Satal Passeggeri. It was always there. And of course, the endemic caper bushes on our Darnas Naidur, on our so. Another look at this arsenal. And we'll see this one. But at the lift, where there's today's lift, that internal part was the arsenal of the Knights of St. John, built by Salvago in 1654, I think. And again, you'll see how galleys were launched bows first. Now, if there were two slips, why is this walled in? Yes, for security. Then when the galley was ready, the wall was taken down. Don't forget this little inside here. We call it a kalanka, we call it. There's a nice story to tell about this. It was referred to as Porto Pidocchio translate it as you like. But I know that a lot of Maltese down a Barclore used to tie their and the filth and that. One day in 1651, later I'll show you the column in remembrance of Chevalier Amat. He wanted to do something useful, and he cleaned the place, but he left his column there as a memento of his good deed. We'll see it later on. But that's what we call the Ekalanka. Notice that there was no no door from here to there. That was closed at this time. And you will see again the Maltese dice are seen everywhere. And on top there's the baracca. Now, being built this arsenal under the Posta d'Italia, it was called the Posta d'Italia arsenal. Now we'll see again, I think I've looked at the picture of it. There you are. This is what's left of the arsenal with the kind Napoleonic touch, because he ordered to deface anything that to do with the Knights of St. John. But it gives us the name of Salvago, who in 1654 built out of his own pocket this arsenal. It was burned down to cinders in 1685 when some nitwit smoked his pipe on top of Posta d'Italia. They say he flicked his pipe like that and it caught fire. Others say no, the corkers left a lot of fire put it out properly. But anyhow, that gave a huge craze to everybody. As nearby, there was a pulverista, a gunpowder magazine. But anyhow, nothing happened. But there you are. That's another arsenal out of four that went out of use by 1685. There was the Calcara arsenal, never survived, and the Fossa arsenal, again another one, but never survived. People started to say, the Knights are moving their influence from Virgo to Valletta. But the arsenals were left at the Cotonera. None of these arsenals they started to build survived. And again, these places, we are here having last look almost in the British period by Ittar. We see the three huge arches of the Virgo Gelli arsenal. Now these places are these buildings are all still in place. You will see the administration block, the church of Our Lady of Mount Carmel, Scamsperis, il Palazzo del Capitano Generale, then three palaces belonging to the Gelli captains. The middle one has been bombed, but we hope it will be put up, we hope at least the facade to match up with the rest of the building, I think. Yes, that's what we call the Marina Grande at Virgo. Still a lot to say about it. And again, there's another one, please, back. There you are, Scamp's Palace, which is today the National Duke of Venezia. The casino? A pity. As you go inside, there was a courtyard. That was always meant. In there you always have found the Bonavoglia. Strong paper with moustaches. Always ready there to take any knight who wanted to cross from Virgo to Valletta. That has been, I think, I've been ruined. I don't know what happened to it, but it's not there anymore. And this palace was a magnificent one. I'll tell you, whenever any VIP came in Malta, first thing he went to see the Grand Master. But after that, He came here to Birgu, in this palace, to pay homage also to the Capitano Generale delle Galerie. He was addressed as an eccellenza, and he was a sort of the senior at White House, Lord of the Admiralty or something like that. He was very important, this Generale delle Galerie. But we come again, thanks to an architect who went to Kew in London, and he found the last drawing of the arsenal superimposed by the present Maritime Museum, which was of course the bakery of the British bakery. Very interesting. You will see one full slip here for the great galley, because the Capitana by then measured 30 feet. Another one, but this one was used for anything else. But that's at last we got the foundation plan of the Birgu arsenal. Going a little down on the, not the first, second, third, palace, you will see like a cupboard in the wall, and this is the story how showing a crucifix there. If another one, we'll see the crucifix. Now the story goes like this: in there, near that place, there was in the olden days the small church of Saint Andrew, the patron saint of fishermen, and it was bought by Knights of Saint John because they wanted to expand that area. As was normally done, a small church being pulled down, there was a cross pulled up, erected, like the ones we still see in some of our places, a round column, and then a crucifix on top. But by time, that took the shape of a cupboard in the wall itself, and we read about this stuff. The devotion of sailors going out or coming in, paying their homage to the crucifix, and of course, out for good luck and coming back Thanksgiving. During the period of the British control of the whole area of Virgo, they got fed up with people still going there and offering candles and flowers, etc. They closed it up in a cupboard. Now, providentially, it was conserved. Otherwise, it was left in the sun. And today you can see it. It's not open all the time, but on certain phases it is open because it's under the control of the parish priest. Yeah, the famous crucifix. Again, this part of it. Then there is the mandrach between the between Virgo and Saint Angelo, and this was a special place also at night. All bark lorry, all boatmen were to ensure their boats with a chain here in this mandaraggio. There was another one at Bormla. Then we come at Valletta, we'll see at least there is one room still bearing, but today you can read it better, I think. They've cleaned it up well. This is where the Congregazione delle Galere used to meet. The Congregazione delle Galere was the famous committee having to do with all operations, administration, food, etc., logistics of the Galleys of the Order of St. John. It's there. And another to one side, another great hall shows the famous Dardanelli exploits of the Grace of the Knights. It's open to the public if one, being polite, and asks the administration there to show this piece. But it's there, another piece of our history. The Bacina, which has been, these are the places it is too much. But the Bacina was there, built by 1706, it was ready to take the work of the great ships of the Order of St. John, what we call the Vascelli. The Bacina was there. Every time one of these Vascelli ship of them came in, all excessive weight was taken off, sometimes even the masts themselves. And all the respective material was taken and stored in storehouses by the side. I'll show you this. The machina was there to take off excessive weight and not to turn over galleys or ships for careening. That was impossible there. And if we go to upstairs, I went there with the late Anna Frost. She passed away last year, unfortunately. She was a regular visitor to Malta. She was an underwater archaeologist. And few Maltese, like myself, we gained from her experience. And one day, the local council invited her and me to go and make an inspection of the roof. And there you are. There are still bollards there, which were used to tie up the certain, what do you call it, certain rigging of this huge grabia, we call it. Sheer legs, I think they call them. The sheer legs, yeah. And another picture shows our friend Anna Frost and the huge, look at the huge iron loops, look, to take in the rigging of the sheer legs. That's another item of interest, which is part of our history. And we go to the Borna stores. Look at these. There are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. These four, you can still see the name on ships on top of them. Uh-huh. And the story goes, now this was repeated by several people from the Cotton era, when the galleys came in, they took them in the stores themselves. They were under the force, the ships themselves were there. It's an impossibility. But anyhow, all their excessive weight, yes, was put in their respective places. We see the first one. This was given to us by, well, I don't know what happened to it now, but I managed to take a photo of this plan of the stores. Look at this. 1, 2, 3, 4, and the last two were general stores. But these were dedicated to four ships. We are going to see their names. And you can see in here still my huge, huge eyeballs like this, which were used to rigging, etc., etc. They have been left, shambles, is it a better word? No. To be deteriorated, it's a pity. Something which I never expected of the British authorities, because otherwise, several other places, they took care of them. But these, it's a pity. Look at these names on top of the doors. For example, the San Giuseppe. Again, providentially, it was preserved because they built this iron stairs on it. San Giuseppe. The real name was La Vergine del Pilare San Giuseppe, but most of the time the ship was addressed as San Giuseppe. Now, again, the city Santa Caterina. And the San Giacomo, and the San Giovanni, they are still there. Now the story goes: San Giovanni and San Giacomo were built at Toulon. There was no time here to build them, and no the technical knowledge yet. But the Santa Caterina and San Giuseppe were built here. Now, finally, San Giuseppe, which was planned to carry 40 guns, the battery nearest the water level could not be used because it's too low near the water level. And if they opened the gun ports on the first explosion, they started. But funny enough, the San Giuseppe and the Santa Caterina, the two built by Maltese shipbuilders, lasted for longer years than the two built at Toulon. Anyhow, by 1729, and we know the influence of French knights over the Order of St. John, we know it, that out of 300 knights, 200 were French. And through their influence from Toulon, they sent us their best shipbuilder, Coulomb, Blaise Coulomb. And he came here and built the San Giorgio, the San Antonio, and something changed. The Maltese needed not much instruction, and they started to get the know-how how to build this great ship, because you should know that there was a lot of a difference between building, constructing a galley, or building or constructing a ship of the line. But it never took much time for British, for the local people to learn their ropes in building these great ships. As a matter of fact, when we start mentioning the Scolaro type of people and Moren, they built excellent ships on the line. And again, now we go over the other side of L'Isla, behind L'Isla we call it, dietro l'isola. There was the great arsenal for building the great ships of the order. This has even all been destroyed when the British people built a dock there. Nowadays it occupied the number 2 and number 3 docks. I mean, this area has been all ruined there. Here on the other end, we'll find another arsenal, civil arsenal, that was used by Maltese to build local merchant ships. Now we come to the modest. I don't want to carry on before mentioning the great number of Maltese artisans that used to work at Cospicua, Birgu, etc., etc. Listen, I always say this. The best craftsmen came from Cotonera. Blacksmiths, you mentioned it, carpenters, gilders, sculptors, painters, anything, you mention it. The last one I know of, a friend of mine, Naidur Kaldoraru in Maltese, a coppersmith who works simply in copper. He just passed away a few years ago. Otherwise, similar crafts were unknown on the other part of Malta. They've trained, through the Knights of St. John, they've trained a lot of people. And what about the generations and generations of sailors? They all started their first ropes on the ships of the line, then they managed their own merchant shipping, especially during the 19th century, which was a golden era for Maltese merchant shipping, especially after 1820. But when we start to study our models with what few, but they are excellent models showing various types of ships that were in use during the Knights of St. John. Now, at the arsenal, they used to keep one hall, especially with these models. I am proud to say, if it's permitted, I restored all these antique models, and that was a great advantage for me. One learns a lot when you are handling genuine things. The last one I restored is a model, a 6 or 5 foot frigate. You learn a lot. You are handling genuine things, you know. These are all dated to the 1750, mind you, eh? Even this frigate. Yes, that gave me a great incentive to deepen my research. Otherwise, it would be dnup sacrilege. A great sin to touch these things without knowing the technicalities behind them. Oh, this is what we call, probably this is San Giacomo, a third rate ship of the line. I was handed a correspondence by a lieutenant, English lieutenant, during the 1930s. He started to do some work on this model. But never continued. I saw his write-up, what's needed and what not. Anna. And we come again now, the bows of the same ship. Oh, it had quite a lot of work to be done. It's lovely, you know, working in and solid copper to make the hinges of these things. I say 40 or a little more of the cordage wasn't a thing. So I had to make my own small rope making machine to get the thicknesses required of the various ships. In there you will find at least 10 sizes of anlep of lenza tana schneidula. It's not used anymore in lenza. But it was anlep, a real hemp. That one. It's not done anymore. Schneidula, modern Danish taking over everything. And I had to do to invent my own rope making machine to get the necessary thicknesses of the rope. A lovely thing. This is still at the Maritime Museum. The poop of the San Gioacchino, dated 1767. Now you have a look at the stern, and you have a look at this one. Look, now there was this custom. The Knights of St. John, whenever they come to build a new ship like this, they used to ask for competitors for the best artwork. Now, you will notice if you go there, the artwork on this side is different to the one on the other side. Why? The competitor was offering two alternatives. I was reading one of these competitions. Juan Azzopardo, he competed, but he never won the thing. So he wrote, please at least give me something to make good for the wax I used for the models. That means modeling was done in wax. It was done by a competition. No wonder the Knights of St. John had the best of the best always. This is what I tried to do. A trick, but I never to join together two photos. This is a marvelously built felucca. We got it, the gilded felucca, belonging to the general of the galleys. We call it gilded because all these things were done in gold. But I was never permitted to touch it much. I never agreed with that decision because it's still very frail and still suffering from certain atmospheric things. This is a felucca, a lovely thing. Whenever any VIP came to visit our General delle Galere, this was employed with slaves on it, all dressed up. Because when it was given to me, I found traces of small clay puppets, call it whatever you like, but I couldn't restore those things. They were all crumbling down. But I saw the colors of the red and bluish things. They used to dress up their slaves, you know, very nicely because of the VIPs. And what about the Winyakur? We call it gondola. Nothing to do with a vanishing gondola, but you having the spiral things, bows and that, they used to call it gondola. I know this one was even being used for play in water because I found a lot of damage on it. And after 30 years, this part here below the water level was painted with silverine. It's a magnificent state of conservation now. And the other one, the Vilena. Now, this is the Migeli. Now, again, this is a unique thing. In Paris, in the Maritime Museum there, you can see a plan, but they haven't got a model. This is the only model of a Migeli which I know of in the Mediterranean. Again, this needs a lot of restoration work, but now it's still kept in perfect condition. A lot of gilded work there, and very good. A 14 bench, we call it 14 bench, the Begeli. And the ceremonial barge belonging to Vilena, this one. We call it a brigantine type of ceremonial barge. And he was Portuguese, was he? Vilhena Portuguese. Because I have compared this with one of their ceremonial barges still in use, and they've got one in their museum. And they are very similar, brigantine. We call it brigantine type of embarkation. Mind you, this was not fit to travel a long way, because it's got a very low draft. But the color scheme there, it's lovely. I'll give one small part of my story. When I was restoring this thing, I remember Captain Zamito, Gutsomsky. Then Joe Muscat. No one knew this Joe Muscat. So he came to my house to see me do some work on, this is the first one I laid my hands on. And I remember this scroll here was missing. So I had to, and he saw me doing it. Well, what are you doing? So I told him, look, this I had to do this. That was my passing. Chef Dev Schneider. He told me, carry on, never game again. he trusted me blindfolded. Marvelous work. Up to today, I don't know what's best, restoring or building models, or research in our documents. I don't know what to choose best, because both are marvelous things. No time limit. You'll forget not to eat that, because that's very important. But you'll forget the clock, what time it is, and you carry on all the time. It's amazing. This restoration work. This is another. We call it a ship of the line, but this very, very, very good workmanship. This lifts up from here. I've been asking them, the Metal Museum, to show it, separately, so that you can see below decks and all the compartments of the ship itself. But up to now, they haven't got the finances enough for a great glass case. And this. Yes, this is how the knights never needed these models to learn their tricks. They were not interested in building their ships. That was left to the Maltese, and of course they were foreign craftsmen also. They were put there for the young knights to study these and their posts of responsibility on these ships. That's what they were interested in, not in the building of these ships themselves. But they had to learn things, because by 1700, seamanship was becoming a bit more technical than before. And that's when they had to put up in the naval school, Pinto encouraging these things, and Derouan also. Derouan even sent apprentices to Toulon, to have locals trained there, then to come back here. Anyhow, these models here are lovely. Look at the last one I had. I only returned back to the Maritime Museum last week. This is an overhead view of the frigate, light frigate, when I had to take all timbers out from here, so that you start strengthening the lower parts. Change out this here, this one, not here. Ah, this is here. I agree to see. So I had to take all things out and start, gluing things and whatnot. That's how it goes. Otherwise, it's only half done. This antenna. This is taken from a glass negative. The only picture I trust. Other people can say whatever they like about this antenna. This is what I go for. And at the bar we can see the only painting, huge painting of the same thing. Now, it's useless to start quoting here. The Knights of St. John went on this thing. At St. Elmo we can see a relic of the Santana, which is the Santana and Baby Mary. they told me it used to be a squarish thing, but then they turned it up in novelty to my Bahajara thing here. And something else which reminds us of the characters of the Odyssey, this is San Giovanni, which is at St. John's. Now, this is taken from manuscript 627, it's a watercolor thing. This was part of the stern of the old Caracca San Giovanni, 1498 or something like that. And something else is the musician's balcony at the palace, which this used, these panels were part of the chapel that was part of the Caracca Sant'Anna. One can just imagine the luxury there was on this great Sant'Anna. And now we come to the crux of it. Our great St. Joseph, this is the crown St. Joseph. And now tradition says that this was brought by the Knights of St. Joseph. Nothing in writing, I never found nothing in writing. But the tradition is there, that this was brought by the Knights of St. Joseph when they came to Malta. Now, studying these things, look at this one. For example, you never saw this. Look at the back there, flat. That was never intended as a processional statue, never. Look again here at this indentation. That must have been blocked with something else. Look at the here, not complete. These were taken before it was gessoed heavily, unfortunately, before this statue was crowned in 1964-65, something like this. Now, I am saying that this could have been one of the statues that used to decorate the bows of the Sant'Anna. Could have been one of those. I mean, if proven wrong, I can take it also. What about these are new things? Eh? But these were made from pictures, from watercolors, belonging to the Knights of St. John, what they left behind them. A Capitan of the Galleys and the Capitano Generale. And in manuscript 113, we find most probably, this is only a suggestion, maybe these uniforms were never put on Maltese soldiers. Could have been. This is for the for the galleys, the regiment of the Malta, and this for the ships of the line. And this bully. Yes. Now just think, reading Dal Pozzo, the number of people, great number of people that were trained on the ships of the order. And that's why, consequently, by time there were so many Maltese courses, because they were so well trained on the ships of the order. That's another legacy. And it came up to present day almost, because we always got some good sailors like other people, if not better. I tell you what, when the constitution was taken by the Algerian courtiers, their task force were dressed as Maltese sailors to take it back. I mean, Maltese sailors were well known everywhere. And that's another what I call a legacy. This is the altar employed on the Galleys, so, which is, you can see this at Wynyacourt Museum in Rabat. This opens like this. And that's another. The general of the Galleys sent up a signal, Galleys were authorized to say mass on their boats. Weather permitting. Most of the time, the mass was said on the beach, where it could be seen by the Galleys, and I never discovered who's the lucky proprietor of this painting. Very good, excellent. Look how they employed the oars to put up a sort of emergency tent for cover, air. What can you say about that, the Cotoner monument in St. John's? That was with the bushy moustache, Bonavoli, huh? And this was a Turk. Listen, this there's a lot to say about this. They were part and parcel of the population, especially in Valletta and Cortonera. And whenever they landed, people would slam doors and windows because they were not trusted anywhere, because while on land, the Bonavoglia would do anything to earn a few grani. And the slave, the same. Another thing, I don't know if you know about this, Ittork Tattaraj. You know about it? I know of another one here in Valletta. Manash, I don't know. I know another one. I was not permitted to photograph it. You know, to show how the order of Saint George, had a power on these Turks. This is called, yes, Ittork Tattaraj. I know of something else, Lerwih Tattaraj. You must permit me this. We had a teacher that I was teaching at primary school in Attar, and there was a class. Good lady, Miss Patch, and she told us this story. They used to live in a four-story kerreja. You can just imagine, without lifts. Eh? And every time in Nanna, Tatifla Zaya used to arrive up there, she would say, "Oh, Lerwi." So one day, this little girl asked this teacher, she told her auntie, who are Lerwi Tattaraj? Because every time she heard her Nanna coming up, say Lerwi Tattaraj. Anyhow, good old days. Quite a few instruments. There is one, look, this one. I think this one, it's in a wooden case that dates to 1600, Bushla, now the campus. Very good here. There are quite a few instruments still dating to the Knights of St. John. About I can't say. These were used on the graves of the Order of St. John, small ones, small bore ones things. These used to be always in front of the great siege monument here. Then they went somewhere else to Ghosts or something. But now they are at the Maritime Museum. They belong to the place where the galleys used to be built. Another one, look. And what we call a mortar shell. I photographed this at the Palazzo Falsonema when it was still under the great Golshur. This is as big as this. This is a mortar shell, we call it. They used to fill it up with with powder, and they just lob it on, not firing like this. And wherever it exploded, did a lot of damage. Anna, a boarding Schneider, a boarding cutlass. And this is, I saw it myself, this one, in front of a bulldozer. This is the gun barrel type of spout that used to be on the on the Nettuno fountain. Then it was brought down. You know how? It was just in front of a bulldozer when someone pulled their attention that that's something which we have to take care of. The same with the one that I told you about him, our friend Chevalier Amati. The date is here. This is a chap who cleaned up Porto Pidocchio. But they made sure that their name was always mentioned there. Our graffiti, there's a lot to say about them too. The chaplain here made sure that besides his cross, he carried his cutlass too. But there are hundreds of the eight-pointed cross, wherever you go. Which is another source of information for us. I think we'll better put that one anchor and stop. And by the way, this is a unique anchor from the galleys of Malta, and it's exhibited at the Malta Maritime Museum. Thank you very much for your attention. See you.
It seems that everybody is well informed now about the lecture. Well, Joseph, thank you very much. And I think all of you, because he was all the time telling me, is it enough? Have I to stop? Do I stop? But I think all of you enjoyed this evening lecture. May I remind you of the next lecture? It's at the Fine Arts Museum. It's by Francesca Balzan. She's an expert on jewelry, the jewelry of the knights. And then you go, if anybody would like to have the complete list of the lectures, I'll give you just this. And thank you very much for coming this evening.
You have just listened to a talk organized by the Malta branch of the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, entitled The Maritime Legacy of the Knights. This talk was delivered by Mr. Joseph Muscat.